I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to the Motormouth podcast with Harry Benjamin and Tim Sylvie. This is the place where we meet some of the biggest names in and around motorsport, chat about their lives and everything in between. This week we're linking up with a Kiwi in Japan as Super Formula, Super GT and soon to be Formula E ace Nick Cassidy joins us for a chinwag about his year so far and what's to come as he embarks on the next steps of his racing career, driving for Envisioned Virgin Racing in Season 7 of Formula E. Thank you so much to you guys who continue to download and listen. If you like it, please do leave us a review. It really helps us to get bigger and enjoy.
Welcome to episode 39 of the Motormouth podcast. Now, before we introduce today's guest, I need to head, as always, over to the English county that's home to a secret nuclear bunker. The Kelvedon Hatch Bunker is a large underground nuclear bunker maintained during the Cold War as a potential government headquarters. But enough of my historical-based Essex war facts. More importantly, Essex is home to my illustrious co-host, Harry Benjamin. How are you doing?
Thank you very much, Tim. I'm very well, thank you. I had no idea we have a nuclear bunker. Once again, you've dumbfounded me with some more Essex facts. Thank you for that. You could probably give a history tour around here. It'd be quite interesting.
I know.
But I'm very good. Bad day to be in the cupboard. It's very hot in the UK and in Essex. So a bad day to be in my little cupboard. But we will power through. How are you?
I'm all right. A tiny hangover. Small.
Yeah.
Very professional. Father-in-law's birthday, surprise birthday dinner last night, and then an early start with the kids as always. So I don't know what the word is. I'm a little bit weary. Let's put it
weary.
That way. Yeah.
Okay. Well, fair enough.
But I'm fine.
I'm sure you can power through.
Yeah. I'll be all right. And we've got three podcast recordings today. So by the end of today, I'm going to be weary and with no voice.
Lots of coffee and we'll be fine.
Yeah. Anyway, shall I introduce today's guest?
Yeah, let's do it.
So, Nick Cassidy is a man with a very exciting future to build on a very successful past. He's actually our second Kiwi on the show after we featured Brendan Hartley way back when. He started his career in karts and worked his way up the ranks in New Zealand before finding himself racing in Japan with Formula 3, Super Formula and Super GT, where he claimed the Japanese Triple Crown. He's now bagged himself a seat in Formula E to replace the outgoing Sam Bird at Envision Virgin Racing. Nick Cassidy, a very warm welcome to the Motor Math podcast.
Oh, look at that, the chairs and everything. Hey, thanks for having me on the show, guys. It's awesome.
It's an absolute pleasure to have you, Nick. Firstly, congratulations as well for the Formula E drive with Envision Virgin Racing. We will come onto that in detail a lot later, I'm sure. But first of all, where are you dialing in from at the moment and sort of how's this last crazy year been for you?
Yes, yeah, certainly a crazy year, isn't it? I'm dialing in from my bedroom in Tokyo. So
nice.
I've been here, you know, throughout this year, since after my Formula E rookie test in Marrakesh back in Japan, focusing on the two championships, Super Formula and GT. And off to Europe soon, as you say, with EVR.
Is that the rookie test where you set a track record?
I like it when you say that instead of me.
Quite impressive. So even before you've set foot in an actual Formula E race, you already hold a track record in Marrakesh.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, that's a pretty cool stat, right? It's nice. It was a really good day, but we were quite lucky as well. It was a test day after the race weekend. Track's in good condition, and so I think whoever was going to go quickest that day would end up with that stat. But pretty cool nonetheless.
Very modest answer. Well done.
And the world has been in pretty much a crazy state, as we just mentioned. How's that been for you? Obviously, you've made it to Tokyo and you're racing out there. So racing is sort of back underway now, which is great. But how's it been the last few months for you, sort of balancing sort of everything coming to a stop almost?
Yeah, I think in some ways we've been quite fortunate here. Cases haven't been too bad. Life was pretty normal in a way. Obviously, there was a bit of a delay in the calendar getting underway, but daily life kind of carried on as per usual. So pretty fortunate. But obviously, as soon as you go on social media or look at the news, you don't really feel so good about what's going on.
Now, let's take it back to the start. So you're from New Zealand, Auckland, I believe. Wikipedia may have told me incorrectly. So take us back to the early days. What were the circumstances that led to you getting in a kart for the very first time?
I think the long story short is my father used to do a bit of racing himself for a bit of fun, but he was mad about cars in terms of working on them, buying, selling parts, just as a hobby. And my uncle on my mum's side and my grandfather, they were also involved in a bit of motorsport at club level. So naturally, I was always around racetracks, which I think helped. And once stepping foot in a go-kart, the passion for racing never stopped.
Were you immediately quick? Did you get in and think, yes, I've definitely got a talent for this? Or did it come more gradually?
And I can't remember at all. So I think...
Well, you were young, weren't you? You were only 6 years old?
Exactly, 6, 7 years old. So, I mean, it wouldn't be right if I sat here right now and told you, yeah, I was going to be the next Senna. I think, I don't know. I didn't even know what to say, mate. I obviously enjoyed it, but probably wasn't that great straight away and took a little bit. I don't know.
What's the junior formula like out in New Zealand? Because we did chat to Brendan, obviously, about this as well. And a lot of non-European drivers, I suppose, or who want to go into racing, they're so, Europe is such a big option for them because there's so many options, there's so many series, there's a nice route to follow. So what was it like when you were, navigating the world at a junior level in New Zealand and then wanting to reach across to other pastures new, and obviously we'll come on to Japan, but before that, what was it like in New Zealand?
Yeah, I mean, we were quite lucky in terms of the karting scene was quite strong in terms of maybe it wasn't like Europe with the big flash trucks and teams and the European championships and things, but the group of guys that we had were at quite a good level. Everyone was racing with mum and dad and similar kind of equipment. And so nearly every weekend we're around the country racing against the same guys, but it was quite a good little competition, probably 6 years. And my era was probably a little bit later than Brendan's. So with me was Mitch Evans, Tom Blomqvist, William Bamber, Earl's younger brother. There was, probably 30, 40 quite good guys. We were quite lucky with that. And the natural progression was to go to Formula Ford, which was also quite strong. And that's where probably Brendan and Earl and a few other guys were at that stage. Which is quite strong, and probably towards the end of my time was tapering off a bit. The world's starting to change. The single seater, Formula Renault thing started to get a bit stronger. But certainly at the time when we were in karting, it was very much karts, Formula Ford, try and do a Toyota racing series, which was a big deal in New Zealand at those times because they were kind of fancy cars for what we're used to.
Well, I think you're technically you're the most successful driver from that series as well, aren't you?
I don't know about that. I mean, a few guys had a bit of success there, but when I was growing up in karts, it was very much that clear ladder. And after that, it was a bit confusing on where to go, because you had to make that step to Europe, which not only in terms of funding was a big difference, but it was halfway across the world. So yeah. That was probably a biggest question mark, but until then it was quite a good system.
And then you took a relatively unconventional route, which others have done. I think I'm right in saying Marcus Ericsson did it as well, and took the step to go to Japan and Japanese Formula 3 initially. How did that opportunity come about, and what were the reasons for choosing Japan over Europe? Was it a cash thing or something else?
Yeah, I mean, I must say it's basically money. Saying that, I did get a couple of chances in Europe as well. I was with some good teams. You know, I had some good kind of one-off deals, but it didn't really click for me, I must say, especially when I was a bit younger. I'd been quite quick in New Zealand, had some good results there in TRS, but that initial transition to Europe, I didn't do a good enough job as I should have, I must say. And basically that inspired to, I never actually completed a full championship in Europe before coming to Japan. So I got to the stage where I was given a really good opportunity by the T-Sport guys, Scully and Russ there, to run European Formula 3 on a two-race program and lead into Macau, which that was like the biggest deal in my career at that time. Backed by three bonds in a factory car, but for them, they were taking a bit of a risk. I was a rookie with not actually that many results. Might have had a good test here or there. The pace was maybe not so bad, but I was still a rookie. And so we went to Macau that year. I had a really, really good run with them. They provided me a really good car and opportunity. And that's when Tom's come knocking on the door. And at that stage of my career, it was the opportunity to be with a factory team for a full season and something I couldn't really say no to.
Yeah, I mean, Tom's were a great team to join. What was it like? You know, you've done a bit of traveling at this point with your racing, but now you're hopping across to Japan, completely different culture, very alien world for someone from Auckland. What was going through your head at that point when you landed in Japan? And were you on your own? Were you with family? What was that whole experience like?
Yeah, I mean, like, far out. I was first given the opportunity to do like an audition test, and I didn't really know much about Japan. Of course, I have heard things, but in terms of actually researching a bit and seeing what the country was like, I must say that my knowledge was pretty low. The email from the team was, okay, here's the driver's contracts. Before you come, we'd like you to sign that. Their M was left unsigned until after the test, and the test was going to be held on the 24th of December, and it's maybe like mid-December, so I'm thinking, all right, I'm spending Christmas at Fuji Speedway, but that's cool, I might have a drive next year kind of thing. Then at the bottom of the email, it's like, okay, once you land in Tokyo, please take a three-hour bus and the team will meet you at the bus station to, you know, do the seat fitting and things. And asked me to come like maybe 3 or 4 days before this test, and I've flown across to Japan, got off like it's snowing at Tokyo Narita Airport, got on this bus thinking, shit, am I on the right bus kind of thing, right? And literally 3 hours to what felt like was the middle of nowhere, jump off the bus and there's my future engineer, team manager waiting for me. And so I remember there was a bit going through the head at that stage, thinking, where am I? What am I doing? Kind of thing. But I mean, it all led into a pretty cool story, and I'm very, very glad that I took the decision that I did.
Wow, that is that's a brave move as well, to go out there, you know, sort of on your own, not knowing anything about the culture. How is the Japanese these days?
Not too bad. I went to school for 6 months in 2017
to learn the language,
so that helps a bit.
Because I suppose, when in terms of sort of talking to your team and the engineers, is it predominantly English because you're there, or what's the mix like?
Yeah, it's if conversations needed with me, it's in English, and the rest of the time it's fully Japanese. And if I don't understand, then
if they're slagging you off, they're talking in Japanese, but if they're being nice, it's English. Yeah.
100%. So, fun fact: I used to manage a guy. Harry's going to start rolling his eyes because I'm talking about managing drivers again. But I used to manage a driver who raced against you in Japanese Formula 3, Struan Moore. I was with Struan for maybe 2 or 3 years. And we took him out to Japan for similar reasons to you. You know, the European route was so expensive. And he went out there. I can't remember who he was. Oh, yes, I can. KPMG was the team he was racing for.
Yeah, that's right.
And I didn't quite have your car, I don't think, you know, in terms of level playing field. I always told him that anyway. It was amazing. I remember watching you. That was the first time I became aware of you. I guess it was 2017 at Fuji. 15. And
15.
Oh, 15. Bloody hell.
Yeah, that's right.
I did the Twin Ring, Motegi and Fuji and maybe one or two others, you were destroying everybody, and it was very clear then that you were on a path to bigger and better things. But in terms of Japanese Formula 3, what do you think about that as a route for young drivers? Should more drivers be looking at routes like that rather than the traditional European system?
I think you've pumped me up a bit there, mate. I don't remember dominating those races as you were saying it. I like it. it's a difficult one, right? Because I think you need the right opportunity out here. And I was pretty fortunate to be with Tom's. My biggest thing that year was I was against a Toyota junior driver, Kenta Yamashita, who's ended up being my teammate in Super Formula and things for a while after that. And for me, it was, okay, I need to get the championship, but that will be my reference for within Toyota, where a few other drivers that come out here will go into, let's say, kind of a random team. And unless they shine and win the championship, there aren't that many eyes on them unless they're in that right position or being kind of, say, judged throughout the year. So I definitely recommend it. You know, kind of thinking kind of outside the square with a young driver's career, if you can't go to a top team in Europe or don't have the right opportunity there, that I think coming out here or the US is definitely a good thing, but also need to be wary that the opportunity out here or being in the right position is important as well.
Clearly moving to Japan was a great move by you, because you've obviously progressed up the ranks. You've won both Super GT, Super Formula, and I am fascinated with Super Formula. It just looks really cool. And having not had much interaction with it, I suppose, it's not broadcast that much over in Europe, I suppose. But if I said it's a bit like Formula One, but in Japan only, is that an accurate description? How would you describe it to someone who had no idea?
Yeah, that's basically what I say on the streets of Tokyo. I mean, like the cars are super quick, right? And that's like really, really, really cool. It's in some ways a bit of a shame that there isn't the exposure within Europe or even Australia, New Zealand. I go home and people kind of ask, you know, what are you racing? Which in a way does feel quite strange considering the level of the cars, teams, drivers. But at the same time, in a way I've kind of forgotten about that recently and just enjoyed what we're doing here.
Mm.
Sorry, Harry, go on.
No, go on.
I was going to say, you've spent a reasonable amount of time now in Japan. Two questions. What's your favourite thing about the country? And please tell me your favourite karaoke song, and I will not accept that you don't have an answer.
All right, we'll start with the karaoke song first, because one just popped up. What was it? Backstreet Boys.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
What is it? Good.
Tell me why
ain't nothing but a heartbreak.
Do you do the whole reach up into the air, bring it back down, boy band kind of maneuver as well?
Try jump on the table and do something with the microphone, and hopefully people forget about the voice, right?
Exactly. That's a solid choice. Solid choice.
Favorite thing about the country? I love the organization and how clean it is. if they, I think they kind of go together in a way. You know, there can be huge amounts of people, yet things operate well, and don't spend hours and waiting in stupid places, or just organization. I think that's pretty key here.
And do you have you've got some classic tracks out there, you know, Fuji being one of them. What's your favorite circuit that you've raced on in Japan?
Probably we've got a track here called Sugo. Remember that one from Formula 3?
It rings a bell. I didn't go to it.
It's like maybe in Formula 3, a 1 minute 10 lap time, Super Formula, 1 minute 3, super, super short, but like really high speed. And it's almost like one of those New Zealand, UK kind of tracks with rough road, but no runoff, bumpy, weird curbs. So, you know, you can have some big shunts there, and you've got to be really, really on the limit to get the most out of it. So that's definitely a favorite for me. But I think all the tracks here have something unique about them, and a really, really good mix or variety here, because you do have those Fuji, Suzukas, where, or even Motegi, you know, that are kind of European style. And then you've got a couple like Sugo that are narrow with no runoff. So quite a cool mix.
Nice. I mean, I'd love to go to Japan. It would just be amazing. I've never been. It's one of the places I desperately want to go, especially to see some of the racing.
Do it.
Bad time to do it in the right now, I think. Maybe next year. But coming up through the ranks, was Formula One the goal? Obviously, you're a Red Bull driver as well. How have they helped you progress? Because they help a number of drivers, and often they're a lifeline, really, as well, in terms of sponsorship. So how early in your career did they come on board, and was Formula One always the goal, or was it just to see how far you could get?
Yeah, like for sure, Formula One was the ultimate dream, right? At that stage of my career when I was younger, but I must say, I never really thought it was realistic, and it was that kind of dream. And going to Europe, it was kind of like, oh wow, let's push for that. But it always maybe seemed that step too far. And I must say, I don't think I really had, like I said, when I first went to Europe, results that I needed to really put me on the shop window for Formula One. Whereas now I probably have that come a little bit late in my career, I must say.
Well, why do you think that is? Is that a case of...
I think that's a little bit to do with the fact of just having a full season and the right opportunity. But at the same time, I probably grew up. I feel like I've actually also improved these last 3, 4, 5 years. I've definitely I've still been getting better, which is probably not a bad thing, considering I'm still wanting to do more years of my career. But
yeah,
probably happened a bit too late in terms of results wise, but it was, let's say a dream and a goal. My link with Red Bull, really, really cool partner of mine. I love working with them. Quite close with the Red Bull Japan team out here, and that happened through Super GT sponsorship, where they sponsored the car I was driving in 2017, and then took me on as a say ambassador or a sponsorship role from 2018 onwards. And so that hasn't been so much linked to the Formula One program, but more as partners out here.
Now, it's a very important part of the podcast here, Nick, and the moment I know you've been waiting for. So I'm going to hand over to my bearded colleague to introduce you to the hardest quiz in motorsport. Over to you, Harry Benjamin.
Thank you very much, Nick Cassidy. Welcome to Motormouths. As Tim just said, the hardest quiz in motorsport. Incredibly competitive leaderboard. 13 points are up for grab. I have 4 questions for you. Well, that's a bonus question. Connor Daly currently tops the timesheets with 13 points. But if you can get 13 as well, you automatically go to the top. That's how it works. And Brendan Hartley sitting pretty in third, 12.5 points. So I think he's probably a direct rival that you're going to want to be. You want to be the top Kiwi on this podcast. Are you ready for your first question?
I was born ready, mate.
Oh, okay. Good fighting talk.
Have a listen to this clip we're going to play you. And the question is, which Kiwi racing driver is this? Have a listen.
It's been a tough couple of seasons, and this has been a clear target. So to reward everyone at JLR and Jaguar Racing is an absolute honour. So thank you so much.
Should get that.
Which Kiwi Racing driver is that?
Mitch
Evans. Boom. A nice, easy one to kick things off with.
Too easy.
Okay, second question. You're joining the Envision Virgin Racing Formula E team for next season, but where did they finish in the team standing last season and with how many points? And if you get within...
Oh, no.
If you get within 10 points, I'll give it to you. Yep. But where were they in the team standings and how many points approximately?
And Sylvain is listening, so don't get this wrong.
Well, it's P4 in the team standings.
Boom. Nice.
There we are. And I would say with 140 points.
Oh, what did I say? No, I said within 10, didn't I?
I said 10, yeah.
Oh,
no.
If I'd said within 20, but that feels like it.
that's fair enough.
They got 121 points. I'm afraid I can't give you the point.
No round of applause.
But you do get a good solid point for fourth in the standing. So doing well. Okay, question three. You won the Drivers' Championship last year in Super Formula, but how many points did you finish the season on?
Oh, mate.
And again, the same rule applies, within 10, and I'll give you the points.
Oh, within 10, there we go.
That should be quite doable. Famous last words.
Yeah, but I was maybe 43?
Congratulations, you're within 10. You got 36 points.
Oh, that wasn't great, was it? I'm overestimating myself.
I mean, you still won it, so I wouldn't complain. I'm going to give you 2 out of 3 on that one. Okay, final question. Oh, wait, sorry. Penultimate question for you. It's another clip. Have a listen. Again, which Kiwi Racing driver is this? Have a listen.
Here it comes.
If I don't get by, I'll get past my sides.
Brendan Hartley.
Boom. He's got it in one.
I thought that was going to be quite a hard one.
I don't know. There's only a few Kiwis that have been in Formula 1, haven't they?
Yeah,
so
true.
If you heard signs.
As soon as we hear the Formula 1 engine noise.
Yeah,
true.
Got it.
That's a good question. Okay. Hang on. How many Kiwis have there been in Formula 1?
Four, is it?
Four. Brendan most recently, and then...
Yeah, I'm Chris Amon, Tony Holm. Out of five, Mike Thacko, Bruce McLaren.
Oh, of God. Of,
yeah, maybe five.
He's the most famous one of all. Yeah.
A nice history there.
You don't get any points.
This is where the real headlines are made. Bonus question for you. For one extra point, and it's looking good, but you do need this bonus point.
I do.
If you get this, I will eat my microphone.
it's a harsh question. If you get it approximately, then I will give it to you. The question is, what does the first line of your Wikipedia page say?
No Googling.
Oh, mate. My Wikipedia page. Can't say this, mate.
Don't pretend you haven't read it a million times. Come on.
A professional racing driver from New Zealand.
Well, it says New Zealand in it.
Okay. Yeah, you're half there. I'll give you half a point for that. You can get another half if you can come up with something else as well.
there's two other elements that you could get. One factual about your non-racing life. The other is a stat or a comment that Harry made right at the beginning of the podcast about a series you'd raced in.
Oh, okay, I know this. Okay. For Nick Cassidy.
You've got the first bit. You're a racing driver from New Zealand.
Yeah,
you're bang on with that.
From New Zealand.
That's half a point in the bag.
Yeah, so there we go. It's the most successful in the Toyota Racing Series.
Have you just there Googled that?
Hands are here, mate. You gave me a kick. You said it in the podcast, right?
Yes, okay, fair. I'm going to give you, I'm feeling generous today. You get the full point. Nick Cassidy, born 19th of August, 1994, is a New Zealand-born racing driver. Cassidy is best known for being one of the most successful drivers in the history of the Toyota Racing Series.
All right. So, you write that, mate.
Yeah. Anyone could write Wikipedia these days. Right, let me just add up the points. It's looking good. What do you think?
Got to beat Hartley.
So I've missed the Envision one, haven't I? That was big.
I'm afraid you haven't beaten Brendan.
What about the other Formula E drivers? We've got Roland, Buemi.
It's a very competitive leaderboard. I'm just trying to soften the blow here. Very competitive leaderboard.
Doesn't sound
you have
good.
Scored a very respectable 10 points. 10 out of 13.
No.
But that does put you, because of how competitive this leaderboard is, it puts you, I'm afraid, in 19th position.
Oh, that hurts.
Just behind Sebastian Buemi, who's on 11. But crucially, I mean, you're equal with David Coulthard. So it's not bad company to be around. I think for the hardest quiz in motorsport, that's a very respectable score. Nick Cassidy, thank you very much for playing Motormouth.
Well done.
Thanks very much. I mean, guys, I must say, it depends how many more guys you're getting on the show, but I'm in the last chance repercharge here, aren't I?
You are.
You are.
Yeah.
I'm afraid so.
To be fair, the leaderboard does go all the way down to 32nd. So when you look at it like that, you're
doing
really
well. Who's last? Is it still Karun Chandhok at the bottom?
Karun Chandhok is still last with 3.5 points. I don't think anyone will ever get that low. He had an absolute shocker. But
did we have the same format back then when we did it with him? Because that's an appalling score.
There were less points up for grabs, but overall, I did a conversion.
Pro rata.
Well
done.
But thank you for playing that, Nick.
That was good fun. Thanks, guys.
Now, let's turn our attention to a more recent future and Formula E. So as we mentioned at the beginning, you've recently bagged a seat with Envision Virgin Racing. Tell us a little bit about how this opportunity came about.
Yeah, firstly, I must say I'm super excited. I've loved following the championship the last couple of years. Looks super strong. We all know how competitive it is and the level of drivers there. So, massively excited to get underway with that. The opportunity came about kind of end of last year. Super Formula had wrapped up and I was contacted about doing the rookie tests, and at that stage I was also looking to kind of extend my stay in Japan. A couple of other things were going on, and so it was very much a thing of, well, I'd love to do Formula E in the future. I don't know how soon that can be, but and this rookie test would be the perfect opportunity to have some experience in case maybe a further opportunity come up at a later point. So that was the kind of mindset at the time. The day went super well. So fortunately was in a position to be able to join the grid quite quickly and, pumped.
Is it possible for you to have expectations at this stage? Can you look ahead into season 7 and think what you'd like to achieve?
I've thought about this a little bit, and I don't think that there is or is wise to in a way. I mean, I think I've got to focus on the process, and we all know that for a rookie, it's not an easy championship to come into and to get on top of. A reference for me is probably Andre Lotterer, because we've been in a very similar position in the type of cars we've been driving in Japan. Obviously, he's had his Le Mans program as well. And when I look at him, it took a little bit to get going. And so in a way, I don't want to get ahead of myself and expect that to be any easier. I'm expecting it to be really tough, but I'm prepared to do the work and focus on the processes that I need to try to be able to get up to speed and get some results with the team as soon as I can.
Mm. Will it be strange relocating away from Japan?
Yeah, I spoke about this with my team of engineers, actually, that it's going to be a bit weird. I've been in Europe before, obviously, so looking forward to it as well. Looking forward to getting back. It still feels more normal for me to be in Europe. So, yeah, I think that's just a positive.
And have you had any tips or words of advice? Obviously, you mentioned, you're following the path of Andre quite similarly. Do you talk with him about anything? Or what about Brendan or Mitch? Have they given any tips about the world of Formula E?
I speak with Mitch about it a fair bit. Obviously, we're going to be rivals. There's no passing of information, but we laugh about certain things. I wouldn't say tips, but yeah, talk about some weird things.
And EVR are part of their mission, if you like, is around climate change, and that's a lot of the reason for why they exist. They have their RAC, their Race Against Climate Change program. Is this something that you're focused on, that you're interested in and aware of? Obviously, you'll be getting involved with it, I'm sure, with the team, but is it something that's already, in your mind?
I must say, it's easy for a driver to join a team like EVR and a company like Envision, who have these huge goals, right, of taking on climate change, and to then say, I'm about that too. But I'm quite serious when I say that there has been a genuine interest or passion, but probably awareness that is an issue in our world at the moment. And I wouldn't be joining a championship like Formula E if I wasn't on that side as well. So it's been interesting. I probably didn't touch on before, but during lockdown, I was getting into new things. And one of my things was I was looking at creating a clothing brand. And it didn't really end up happening, but I was in the processes of going about that. And that's something as well we were looking into: how sustainable can that be, and the different, ways of going about it. And it's funny, when we talk about Formula E, how much of the conversations from talking about a clothing brand are relatable in terms of how we go about motorsport or racing these days as well.
Yeah, absolutely. No, it's an interesting subject. Who is your best pal in motorsport? Who's the guy that you hang out with the most or enjoy spending time with in the paddock?
I've been best mates with Mitch Evans since we were really young. So I would say Mitch there. You don't go through motorsport unless you're a dick, right, with no friends. So I think everyone has a lot of friends up and down pit lane. And we've grown up with Tom Conquist as well. So the three of us have always been pretty close.
There must be some dicks out there somewhere with no friends in the paddock.
100%. You can't name them here, mate.
No, come on, name a shame. Nick Cassidy lays into Romain Grosjean.
Romain Grosjean, of all the people to pick.
First name that came to mind.
You've got to be mean on the track and friendly in the pit lane, I suppose.
Good one.
What's your most memorable racing memory? Your best racing memory? Do you have one?
Yeah, it'll be the Super Formula Championship last year. For sure. I say that I came so close in the year before, 2018. Yeah. I missed out by less than a second. And so that was a sweet revenge.
Yeah, I bet. It's a travesty that series isn't bigger over here, isn't it? It's such a cool championship. We need to somehow raise some awareness of Super Formula in Europe.
I think it is slowly, because obviously we've had people like you, Andre Lotterer, Pierre Gasly, I think, did a lot for it as well, with him sort of switching between that and Formula One. I think slowly, the last couple of years, it has sort of started to become more on the radar, would you say?
Yeah, I guess so. Rosenquist as well, Felix, he was out here.
Of course, yeah.
Last year, it helps obviously when drivers go on to do other things, because all they're doing other things at the same time, because I think then you talk about it more. But probably, to be honest, we've had quite a few conversations out here with European drivers of how do we, bring awareness to the championship, or how do we promote this? And it kind of comes down to the Japanese series organizers. They don't really want to. They're not bothered. They're doing their thing in Japan and they're happy with that. And so I think unless they have that kind of willingness to do so, probably not much will change. Which is sad, because I'd like to see
more of that. I think actually it is broadcast on, I think, Red Bull TV broadcast it over here.
Oh, really?
From this year. Yeah.
So that's at least something. But outside of racing, Any hidden talents?
Hidden talents? Oh, no. I wouldn't be my karaoke. My it wouldn't be that. Oh, I don't want to be boring and say I've got none, but none come to mind.
Can you play an instrument or, I don't know, raise your eyebrow over the other, something like that?
I'm a really average golf player. Yeah.
What's your handicap?
What's your handicap?
I probably mid-90s at the moment. Okay. 95, 96.
Oh, yeah. What score? So your score are 96. That's perfectly acceptable. That's about my level.
I actually know golf.
But
I started this lockdown. So March, April, I've got into it.
Well, that's decent.
Yeah, I'm loving it.
If you're scoring sub 100 after a few months of playing golf, that's pretty impressive. Harry will never be able to play golf because he's 6 foot a million and will never find a golf club that fits. So just forget it.
God, that's another sport ruled out. Yeah. First, I can't be a driver. Now I can't be a golf player.
And you can't get in a go-kart.
But to be fair, I'm born to be a basketball player, to be fair.
Yeah, that's what I should have been.
Should have done more of that. But, okay, well, let's flip that on its head then. What are you really crap at?
Karaoke.
Karaoke.
That keeps coming up.
Yeah.
I'd say coordination's not so bad. Probably not much I'm terrible at, but the voice and probably not the best.
Not the best singer, no. fair enough. Well, we have a final three questions that we like to ask to all our guests. So, Tim, do you want to kick off with the first one?
Sure. So, what has got you excited at the moment?
Formulary.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Perfect answer. Yeah. If not doing what you're doing, being a very successful racing driver, what would you be doing? And we could rule out being a singer.
I would love to have some kind of business and some kind of, especially online tech marketing, got a passion for that.
Excellent. Great. Our final question for you, which throws up a myriad of different answers from various different people. Some people get really deep on this, others just go with spiders. What are you scared of?
Snakes.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
no, not a fan. I sense that one's coming and... Snakes.
Yeah, don't like them. But New Zealand's fairly, it's a bit like England, isn't it? There's nothing too big and scary.
Yeah, I reckon I saw my first one like a couple of weeks ago.
Really?
I mean, outside of a zoo or whatever. Yeah.
God. Was in Japan, yeah.
Yeah, we're riding the bikes on a training ride and little snake in the middle of the road. So.
Oh, God. Yeah. I once had a friend who had a... I once had a friend who had a pet snake and I just couldn't get my head around
it. No way.
Why would you have a snake for a pet? And they used to have like frozen mice in the freezer, which you'd feed it. It was just the whole situation was so horrible. It's like, oh, no. They're meant for not anywhere being near any kind of human, let alone a house.
I know we mention it all the time when we ask this question, but it's funny to tell people because the weirdest ones we've had are definitely Crofty and I can't remember who said the other one, but they with the tiny holes. But Crofty's got a fear of tea bags. And who was it?
Rachel Brooks.
Rachel Brooks,
The Sky Sports presenter. Yeah, it's a sort of fear. You have it as well, Tim.
A fear of tiny holes.
What's it actually called?
There's a word for it, and I can't remember what it is. But it's this fear of multiple tiny holes. So like a sponge. Ah, even the thought of it starts making me go.
Oh,
weird.
Mate, my girlfriend has the same fear.
Yes.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about.
It's a real thing.
Yeah, mad about that.
Yeah, it's what making me go this? Weird as we're talking. But there are pictures that you can look at online. If you, I can't remember what the
person with holes in it and stuff. There we go. That's it.
So I have great sympathy for your girlfriend, but she is not alone. There are other people out there like me, Rachel Brooks. It's a thing. So I'm going to start a new podcast spin-off about tiny holes.
Yeah, you could do that. Phobias. That'll be it.
Anyway, it's been. It's been a pleasure to have you on, Nick. We've followed your career with great interest. It's amazing to see a Kiwi coming up through the ranks and doing well, and your success in Japan, and obviously the Formula E seat with EVR, which is hugely exciting. And we'll make sure we can, hopefully when we can, get to a race and come and see you properly. But you're clearly a very quick driver, a humble guy. Really nice chap. We wish you all the best for season 7. Let's hope it's uninterrupted with no COVID season and all that nonsense. Let's get a full season in. But thank you for joining us, and we'll see you soon.
Awesome, guys. No, that's it's been a lot of fun. So appreciate you inviting me on the show, and let's do it again sometime.
Thank you so much for listening to the Motormouth podcast. Do make sure you give us a follow on our socials, Twitter at Motormouth _, Instagram at Motormouth _official, and on Facebook, just search Motormouth. You can download the Motormouth app, where you can get exclusive video content from MMTV, create your own social profile and interact with others, and check up on all the latest happenings with whatever motorsport takes your fancy. Don't forget to like, subscribe and review. And until next time, you've been listening to the Motormouth podcast.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.